I'm Casper Van Dien, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hi, I'm Christos Gate.
Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente.
Hi, this is Ruth Fletcher Gate.
I'm Barry Gregory. And
hi, this is Derek Donovan. And
this is Victor Dandridge.
Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
Everybody, and welcome once again to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, and to my immediate right, down in the deep, deep bowels of Louisiana, is my good friend Mike Manning. Mike, how are we doing today?
I'm doing excellent, thank you very much.
That is terrific. And way, way up north in the cold, desolate wastelands, right behind the wall, is my good friend Josh and LT. Josh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. Got a summer beer in my hand, and the lawn is freshly mowed.
Oh, I love that. Any White Walkers up there yet?
No.
So winter is over?
No, I think it's coming. So you better wear a bib.
And winter is always coming. LT, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. We are ready to embrace you with our chilly, chilly northern air.
And for those of you who don't know, I'm moving back to Boston this very week, and I will be back in the fold. I love Boston. Great town. So did everyone have a chance now to see Civil War?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Excellent, because that brings us to our topic today. We're going to be talking about the Black Panther. I don't think we're going to be talking too much about the movie, since for some of our listeners, there still might be a spoiler or two. But let me say this. 20 or 30 people in the theater I was in, as soon as the credits started rolling, walked out. Do you tackle those people? What do you do?
No, you let their ignorance define their lives. Just let them go.
Who leaves?
It's best not to tackle.
I won a bet with my wife that there'd be even a second trailer after all the credits had rolled, knowing for certain that I was going to win this bet because I have the internets. Yes, I got a Be Nice to Tom night out of that. And I abused the hell out of it.
Wow, those things are like going away like hotcakes, aren't they?
Oh, a Be Nice to Tom night is worth its weight in gold, especially around my house. And you've been married for 20 years, guys. You'll know what I'm talking about. So who's going to give us the background on our favorite African-African superhero? The Black Panther.
I will take care of that. For those of you who don't read comic books as much as the four of us, you probably saw Chadwick Boseman, who was Black Panther in the Captain America Civil War movie.
And he did an excellent job, I want to add.
Did a phenomenal job. He is the Black Panther I hoped he would be. Without giving away any spoilers, let's tell you all about his superpowers. Black Panther does not have quite superpowers, but he does have some. He is the religious and political leader of the Wakandan Nation, which is a made-up country in Africa in the Marvel Universe. And it is the most technologically advanced society in the world as a result of a comet that crashed there a long time ago that was filled with a unique ore called vibranium. Now, the vibranium is important because Black Panther has it laced into his costume, so it gives it makes him bulletproof. He also has vibranium in his boots, which allow him to jump really high and not hurt himself when he lands. You'll also notice that when he does land, he's silent. That's because the vibranium is absorbing the sound. So he has super strength. much akin to Steve Rogers. And the reason behind that is part of the ritual to become the Black Panther is to eat an herb that is grown on the mound of vibranium. He has to do this every couple times a year, and it gives him incredible enhanced skills. His agility is increased. His strength is increased. He can lift about 800 pounds or so. And that's why he's a comparable fighter to super soldier steroid guy, Captain America. You also will notice that he's got heightened senses, and the mask that he wears is a ritualistic mask that also hides his identity, but he's also got goggles inside the mask for the technology so he can go to infrared if he needs to, or a bunch of other different types of vision, so that way, no matter what the situation, he's prepared for it. He's also got, in some comics, vibranium daggers or sonic daggers, depending on who's the artist and who's the writer. And in some comics or in some movies, he may have claws that are made out of vibranium, which are very, very, very sharp.
The claws were pretty cool.
Claws were cool. So Black Panther was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and appeared in Fantastic Four number 52 in July of 1966. Originally conceived by Jack Kirby to be called the Cole Tiger. Later on, now 1966 was when he appeared, a couple months before the formation of the Black Panther Party. He predates the Black Panther Party and really and doesn't have anything to do with it. In fact, at one point, Marvel was so scared that he might be considered connected to the Black Panther Party that in Fantastic Four number 119 in 1972, he gets renamed the Black Leopard. And when Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm are over in Wakanda, they're like, why are you called the Black Leopard now? He goes, well, I don't want to confuse people by thinking I'm associated with that political party. I have nothing against them, but I do not support them. They just were trying to make Black Panther neutral in the whole Black Panther Party issue. So when you look at the Black Panther, there's essentially five writers who are important in the career of the Black Panther. The Silver Age, the writer is Roy Thomas, and that's his run in the Avengers, because that's primarily where the only place the Black Panther appears in the Silver Age, with the exception of a couple issues in Captain America and Daredevil and the Fantastic Four. Roy Thomas pretty much keeps him in the background of the comic for the most part. He doesn't have a lot of storylines, but they do develop some characters for him. But in 1973, a guy named Don McGregor starts a Black Panther run in the comic book horribly titled Jungle Action. Tom, you've read the Jungle Action. What did you think of it?
I did run that run, and it was a lot of fun to read. I often get some of those confused, but that's the one where he was fighting the Klan a lot. One of the things I noticed right off the bat is that when on the cover, they usually spelled Klan with a C, and they kind of made it a pseudo organization like the Ku Klux Klan. But inside the comic book, they always used the K. There were a lot of like playing with the Black Panther fighting the Klan, and a lot of the villains. One of note was the Hangman, who would have a noose and would hang his opponents. Was very reminiscent of the African American experience. When the KKK was really being, running amok in the South during the Civil Rights Movement. So a lot of those comic books are tough to read sometimes, but it's great to have an African-American, an African superhero, defending, the people. And it's a great run. Everyone should read this one.
Yeah, especially because the first 13 issues of the series called Panther's Rage is considered by most comic historians to be the first Marvel graphic novel. Over the course of most comics back in those days ran maybe one issue or two issues at the most. This spanned 13 issues, and because it was a bi-monthly comic, that's over 2 years worth of comic books to just conclude one storyline, which in itself was an amazing and defined who the Black Panther was. But what I really liked about it is you can pick up any issue and McGregor is able to give you the backstory of the issues that you've missed in case you haven't been reading the whole run, and you can catch right up to it, which is something they had to do back then because there were no comic book stores and you didn't have pull boxes. You had to go to the spinner rack and hope that your local newsstand had actually ordered the stuff. So after McGregor does the Jungle Action run, he comes back later on and does another run in Marvel Premiere, again, going along with the storyline of the KKK in the Marvel Premiere series. Then we go back to Jack Kirby. From 1977 to 79, there's a 15-issue run of the Black Panther. Kirby does the first 12 issues. If you guys like acid trips, this is the comic for you.
The Space Frog, one of my favorite inventions of all comic book history. The Space Frog takes the Black Panther on a wild trip.
Yeah, he meets up with the collectors, and the frog can transport people from other times into the present or from the past or the future. It's a really LSD trip. That's all I got to say about it. And the artwork is classic Kirby, and it makes you feel like you're having a flashback.
Not that any of us do anything like that to have flashbacks.
No, not that any of us would ever have a flashback like that. But
none of us. No, sir. Keeping the temple
clean. Speaking of flashbacks, have you actually seen the concept art for Coal Tiger?
Is that with, like, the yellow costume?
He's got the yellow stripe and the big T-belt and, like, the little half cape. It's horrible. It's awful.
So that brings me to the next series. Because next the guy who took over was Christopher Priest. And he did it in the Black Panther. What was their series that they had? The Max issue? Or no, Marvel Knights.
Marvel Knights, yes.
And this is a phenomenal series. If you're going to read anything about Black Panther, this is the series to pick up. Christopher Priest, 1998 to 2003. It is phenomenal. And one of the reasons behind it is because he takes all this stuff. At one point in the series, Black Panther is walking through his little Hall of Fame, and there's the Coal Tiger uniform in the background, just sitting there like a little Easter egg for all those fans. The best part, I think, of Priest's run is the introduction of a guy named Everett K. Ross. And it's not going to spoil it if you haven't seen Civil War, but he's also in it, played by Martin Freeman. Everett Ross is the POV for reader to come into the comic book on. All right, he's a smarmy Greek chorus who skewers not just the superhero pantheon of the Black Panther, but all of superheroes in general, pointing out the ridiculousness of the situations that he is constantly put into by hanging around with the Black Panther. I know I overuse this phrase a lot, but I highly recommend that. The next author to take over and do a bunch of runs was Reginald Hudlin, he was the president of BET at the time he was writing Black Panther. So if you ever have any of you guys seen the Black Panther cartoon that was on BET?
No, I missed it.
I saw some of them.
Yeah, it's verbatim his storyline from the Black Panther comics. So Hudlin is has a totally different take on the Black Panther, and he kind of throws out all the past history. It starts completely over with a new slate, which is fine for a writer to do. I just don't like it because I loved how Christopher Priest embraced all the past history and brought it in with him, because I'm a comic historian, and that's what I like. But if you want to get a fresh start on him, you can totally start off by reading the Hudlin stuff. Or if you don't like to read, just go check out the Black Panther cartoon that was on BET. I think I know I watched it on Netflix, so it's available.
It looks
there.
Like it's available on YouTube.
Well, there you go. You can watch it on YouTube.
And there weren't that many episodes, as I recall, 13, 14?
Yeah, it's pretty much the first 6 issues of the comic book that are retold into an animated format. It's not a traditional animation, too. It's a lot of...
Is it more like a motion comic?
It's more like a motion comic, yes.
I kind of like those. Well, Tommy, why don't you tell us what your favorite run on the Black Panther was?
Well, I decided to talk about the Marvel Comics Civil War, which is different from the Captain America Civil War in theaters right around now. With the Marvel Civil War, Black Panther, since he is not an American, is not required to register. And he's on his honeymoon with Aurora, Storm from the X-Men. And they see what's going on in America, and they kind of decide that they can't really sit on the sidelines. And so they start going and visiting people just to kind of try to keep things from blowing up even worse. They get invited to visit Dr. Doom. They do so and kind of come to the conclusion that he's crazy, but he makes some valid points about the Registration Act. They visit the Inhumans, who also are kind of like, leave us out of this. This is not our fight. And then they meet. Then they go to meet with the President of the United States and are dealt with kind of hostily. And diplomatic tensions start happening between the United States and Wakanda. And Black Panther starts kind of secretly funneling technology and cash to Captain America until the end, where he kind of comes right out and helps physically as well. Civil War is a great story arc, and the Black Panther had a really interesting role in that everybody was looking to him for guidance. He was very well respected as a statesman and as a superhero, and was kind of looked at as somebody who could help bridge the gaps between the two diametrically opposed factions of Captain America and Iron Man. And everybody was kind of hoping that he would broker peace. But Iron Man was a little too unwilling to hear any other side other than his own. And Captain America was very much interested in fighting for what he thought was right.
Huh. All right. Well, Josh, what was your favorite run?
Oddly, I'm going to talk about a series of comics that sort of leads up to a Black Panther storyline. It's not necessarily initially about Black Panther. It's called Shadowlands. It's sort of where Daredevil has a few problems that I won't get into. A little bit of demonic possession from the hand. Comes back, just a teeny bit of demonic possession, comes back and starts wreaking havoc in his old neighborhood. It's a pretty big, intricate. There's a lot of titles involved. There's, you know, Moon Knight, Power Man, Spider-Man, Elektra, Ghost Rider, the Thunderbolts. It gets pretty involved. It's a pretty dark and desolate storyline that really ends with Daredevil coming, being essentially defeated by sort of like all the street level heroes, and deciding that he is not worthy to be the defender of Hell's Kitchen, and basically asks Black Panther to take that mantle on, to take the streets over for him. It's hard to get through, honestly. There's a lot of sort of sidesteps into other comics. The miniseries itself is, I think, only 5 or 6 issues. But it's a complicated storyline that covers a lot of ground, but eventually leads up to Black Panther taking a larger role over with the street level heroes of Manhattan.
Yeah. So you're saying, I just want to make sure, Daredevil had like what, 24 or 48 hour, insanity or?
No. This is, you know, he gets demonic possession by the hand from Japan. He comes back. He's in charge of the hand.
He turns the hand loose on the streets of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
To enforce his will.
Well, that sounds terrible.
Isn't there a helpline you can call for, you know, in those cases when you get demonically possessed?
Well, if that's unfortunately that you call somebody to get a hand.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we already talked a little bit about some of my favorite ones. I'm looking at Black Panther issue number 19 of Jungle Action. And as I'm saying, in the heart of civilization, T'Challa battles the permanent power of the Klan. In this particular comic book, the Klan, spelled with a C on the cover but a K in the comic book, is shown as being kind of backward, kind of primitive, not that well educated. And T'Challa and his people, his followers, are more enlightened. They're dressed in more modern garb. The Klan is very much seen as backwards and ill-educated. I love that there was a comic book out there that was trying to show kids that the Klan is, you know, is what they are, a terrorist organization of people who are pretty much stuck in the 1940s and 50s. And the 1970s was, you know, a time to start moving forward with race relationships. I still have not – I've talked to a lot of comic book writers, and I still haven't really figured out why the Klan is always – almost always spelled with a C on the covers and almost always with a K on the inside. That's something I really want to try to get a definitive answer on for part of my research. So that's kind of my favorite part of the Black Panther.
I'm guessing it's because they just don't want to put that on the cover for worried about sales. Like the Black Panther's costume originally was a half mask where you could mm-hmm. see that he was black, but then they changed it to the full mask later on. Mm-hmm. I think because they were probably worried that people wouldn't even sell the comic down south if there was a black superhero on the cover. Even later on when in one of the Avengers, when they're telling the secret origin of the Black Panther, or they don't call him the Black Panther on the cover of the Avengers, they call him T'Challa because they were worried about putting Black Panther on the cover of the Avengers because they were afraid people would be thinking it's linked to the Black Panther Party.
Exactly, but as a historian, I can't guess. We can't guess. We got to find a little bit of a definitive answer on this. So I'm going to keep looking until I have someone who actually knows on that one. That's my guess also, though. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying your guess is bad. Your guess and mine line up exactly perfectly. And speaking of the half mask, how many of you guys have read the Blue Marvel series?
I have not.
I have not.
You know about the Blue Marvel, though.
Yes.
So a very interesting character. He was this is a retcon superhero that was supposedly around in the 1950s, who was known as the Blue Marvel, was as powerful as the DC equivalent of Superman, had a bevy of powers, was very well respected. But when an energy blast takes some of his mask away, everyone finds out that he's African American, and no one wants a walking WMD with an African American. So they asked the Blue Marvel, JFK asked the Blue Marvel to retire. And it's an excellent storyline. It reminds me a little bit about, you know, the Black Panther and how he was received and some of the things that they, you know, did to kind of minimize the fact that he was African American. Blue Marvel did the exact same thing by wearing a bodysuit that disguised the fact that he was African American. Great read.
Well, if you're interested in the Blue Marvel and the Black Panther, I suggest you pick up The Ultimates, which is going on a series that's going on now. It stars Black Panther, Blue Marvel, Captain Marvel, the new Giant Man,
who's the new Giant Man?
He's a Hispanic guy, but I can't remember what his name is offhand. They also have the former Captain Marvel, the one who was made up of light. I think she's called Spectrum or something like that now.
I remember her.
Yeah. So they've got a whole bunch. Oh, and Galactus is a member of the team, too.
Our good friend Justice does a terrific costume of that particular version of Captain Marvel. Just saying. Jay Justice, great cosplayer. She does that particular Captain Marvel really well.
Yeah, and it's a good series if you're interested in – it's got a cosmic scope to it. It's not kind of my jam. I'm not into the big cosmic scope kind of deals, but if you like that kind of stuff – check out The Ultimates.
All right. Well, speaking of comic books and new comic books, Mikey, what do you got in the front of the long box?
In the front of the long box, I have The Black Panther. It's just started. It's on issue number 2 by Ta-Nehisi Coates. If you like politics mixed in with your comic books, this is the one. It's all about political intrigue and a formation of a civil war in Wakanda. Now, to tell you how much people were excited about this series, it was the number one comic book in sales in the month of April. No other comic book really came close. I'm hoping there's not a big fall off on issue number 2, but I'm enjoying both issues.
Well, I'm really hoping that this takes off. I mean, there's a lot of interest in the Black Panther right now because of his work and his, you know, being in Civil War and the character being so popular. Tommy, what do you got in the back of the long box?
I have something that is not that old and yet very old at the same time. I'm going to talk about
Gene.
No, it's a comic book put out by Dynamite back in 2013 called The Owl. The Owl is an old Dell comic character from the 40s, and they redid him in April. They announced in April of 2013 they announced they were going to do it, and then later on that year they actually put him out. The covers were done by Alex Ross. The writing was done by J.T. Kroll. And art was done by Hubert Kahn Michael. This was a great four-issue miniseries. I recommend picking it up. The artwork is fantastic. They do some kind of the owl thinking back to the 40s in which they kind of pulp up the panels, whereas everything else is very, very modern and crisp and clear in the artwork. And it's just a good old story about, you know, a guy trying to fight crime. He did have a lady owl friend and in the 40s. And when he comes back to fight crime in modern day because he's been trapped in a mystical urn that broke and kept him in there for 50 years, he comes back into the modern world and he starts fighting crime. And he meets the newest incarnation of his lady owl friend. And she's a bit too ruthless for him. And it's all about him trying to fit into modern society while keeping on to his values that he had in the 40s. And it was just a great little comic book read. It's only four issues. Recommend picking it up.
Now, was he an actual character from the 1940s that they just redid, or?
Yeah, he's a Del Comic character.
Okay.
You know, he's kind of like Batman in that he's just a guy in a suit. He does have kind of some special powers. He could blind people with a ray of black light in the evenings, and that's kind of his big like super splash. But other than that, he's just a guy in a suit who can fly around using his owl suit. And it was just a really charming read for me. You know, nothing too political, nothing too earth-shaking, just a good old-fashioned guy wearing a costume fighting crime story.
His first appearance actually was Cracker Jack Funnies number 25, and that was July of 1940.
Yeah, I like when they do that, when you get public domain heroes and you just go back and retell them. You know, our friend Barry Gregory's doing that with John Amon, Amazing Man. And I think Dark Horse had a run of Captain Midnight, which was spectacular.
And, of course, someone did Green Llama pretty well already.
Yeah, I was going to say Dynamite is really kind of, in my mind, doing that really well. And they did do Green Llama and the Terror and a bunch of older comic heroes.
Careful, kids. He spits.
And it was just this is just a great example of what they do. And the covers are stunning because, well, it's Alex Ross. Who doesn't like Alex Ross's comic covers?
Everyone likes Alex Ross, and we should celebrate our comic book writers and inkers and artists while we can. Speaking of which, instead of going into a social justice issue today, we're going to talk about a loss that we had here in the comic book world. Mike, you want to give us the back?
Yeah, Darwin Cook passed away on May 14th with his battle with cancer. So I'm going to start off by reading the biography that's actually in the back of his comic book called Solo Number 5. It was by DC Comics, and it won the 2010 Eisner Award. If you're going to read one comic by Darwin Cook, I suggest you read that because it's a whole bunch of short stories that he wrote and drew himself. But this is his background. He was born in 1962 in Toronto, Canada. He had an early facility with crayons that led to a lifelong exploration of the popular and fine arts. Cook became a professional comic artist at the age of 20 when he was given a penciling job by comics legend Julius Schwartz. He then proceeded to take a left turn by spending the next 15 years of his life as a magazine director, graphic, and production designer. In his mid-30s, Darwin decided the time was right for another crack in a career in comics. Unfortunately, no one in comics agreed with him. After he responded to an ad placed by Bruce Timm in the Warner Brothers studio, what followed was a 3-year stint as a storyboard artist for Batman and Superman Adventures and the opportunity to create and animate the groundbreaking main title design for Batman Beyond. After a season of directing on the Sony show Men in Black, Darwin was approached by DC Comics about a project that he had sent in for consideration years earlier. The result was a one-shot entitled Batman Ego. Soon after, Cook reconstructed and redesigned the Catwoman monthly comic and went on to write and draw the 96-page graphic novel Selina's Big Score, which Wizard magazine hailed as comics' single greatest heist story ever. Cook's next project was The New Frontier. Embraced by the extending scale and scope of an epic film, playing out across almost 400 pages in virtually every classic DC character, through a mix of storytelling and imagery that are the same time classic and modern, Darwin reminded us why we love these characters so much. What's great about The New Frontier is, if you've ever seen the movie The Right Stuff, this is The Right Stuff, but instead of astronauts, it's superheroes. So you get the total feel that you're reading a throwback comic, even though it's told with a more modern sensibility to it. And again, on the 14th of May, Mr. Cook passed away of cancer.
He will be sorely missed, of course. I liked him as a writer. I really enjoyed the Before the Watchmen series, and I just, you know, I was going over his stuff. He wrote the Silk Spectre one, which I thought was the best of that series.
Yeah, he also wrote the Before the Watchmen miniseries too, which was 6 issues. In addition to that, now, LT, have you read New Frontier?
I have not read New Frontier as of yet. I did purchase it this weekend, but I have not read it yet.
Yeah, and it's also on video too. So if you,
I've seen the video. The video I really liked.
Yeah, and it's the same kind of artwork. They pulled the storyboards right off because, you know, he was big into animation for a long time.
I was going to say, it was very very 60s feel to it.
And Wonder Woman, the take on Wonder Woman, especially the scene in the in Vietnam, was pretty radical.
I liked Darwin Cook's Wonder Woman because she was taller than everybody else because yes. She was an Amazon.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a great reason to like her. I like tall women. I like my wife too, but, you know. Speaking of liking everything, Josh, why don't you take us off on a tangent?
So today we've been talking a lot about the Black Panther. Why don't we talk about a black lion? Welcome back, Voltron. And thank you, DreamWorks and Netflix. If you have not seen the preview for this, you should just get on the interwebs right now and blow your childhood mind back. The art looks fantastic. I mean, DreamWorks just being involved, I may have just peed a little in my pants when I watched it. I'm just saying.
So it's good.
It looks fantastic. The art is amazing. And I cannot wait for Netflix to release this series.
Netflix has done so few things wrong that I'm very excited about this.
Well, is it going to be the 5 lions, or is it going to be that bogus one where it's a whole bunch of little ships? Wait,
32 oh, no. Different vehicles?
5 lions, my friend. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 lions. Yeah.
6 is too many. 4 is not enough.
That's right. Nobody needs takes a five hopping on one-leg Voltron. Yeah. Absolutely. I cannot wait. It looks amazing.
And why don't we just, hey, there's a bad guy. We should form Blazing Sword now. Why exhaust our resources, try everything else, and then go, all right, screw it, Blazing Sword.
Well, they kind of did that in Pacific Rim, too. Hey, we got this sword. Maybe we should try this.
Oh, that's a good idea. How can we
know? You know what they did in Pacific Rim? All the monsters were emanating from one hole. Why didn't they just build a base around the goddamn hole?
Why didn't they build a giant shredding machine? So as soon as they came out of the hole, they went in the giant lawnmower type shredder, like, hey, welcome to Earth. But no, let's spread all our Jaegers out. Around the entire planet.
Yeah. Put a Jaeger in Alaska.
I can explain exactly why they didn't do that, because the military-industrial complex was making money hand over fist building Jaegers.
Right. It's all Jaeger this, Jaeger that.
Halliburton wants its Jaeger manufacturing.
Stick it back into the in your pocket, you card-carrying Bernie Sanders liberal.
Well, bringing it back around to Voltron, I sincerely hope this series is better than the comic book series, Robotech Voltron. Because I read that, and it was not very good.
I'll agree with you on that one. That one was pretty bad. What a fantastic time to be a nerd. So many great things. I remember when I was a kid, we were so happy that the Incredible Hulk was on once a week, and that was pretty much our only fix. And now, you know, now it's the age of nerds. It's a golden age. It's a wonderful time. Speaking of which, have you guys seen that there might be a Buckaroo Banzai TV show coming?
Yes. Yes, I'm looking forward to hearing about it on Kevin Smith's podcast.
All right. Anything? Let's talk a little bit about plugs. I think, Mike, we ran a special episode last week with an interview with Mike Grell, did we not?
Yes, we did.
One of my favorite writers. Mike Grell, one of my favorite guys in all of comic books. I got some great artwork from him and some terrific, hilariously funny stories, which I'm sure he told better. Do we have another interview this week?
We do. Josh, you want to tell us about your interview with Mark McKenna?
Absolutely. Mark McKenna was kind enough to answer my questions at Super Mega Fest. Mark McKenna, if you don't know the name, has been in the comics for 30 years. He has a huge resume of over 500 comics, 8,000 pages, X-Men, Spider-Man, Batman, Justice League. He is all over the place, and he was kind enough to take some time and talk to me. So he's a very, very good guy. Listen to that and go to markmckennaart.com and his personal series called Combat Jack, which is a Space Marine sort of Starship Trooper-like comic that is entertaining fun.
All right, let's jump right over to that before LT can try to stop us with plugs. Go.
Hey, folks, this is Josh Hopper, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. We're here with Mark McKenna at Super Mega Fest in Marlboro, Mass. Mark, thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
Always my pleasure.
So you've touched so many comics along the path of your career, from Alpha Flight to X-Men, Legion, all across the DC universe. You've had a long and a storied career. It's a big, big list. And as we look at sort of today and how comics and the world is evolving, have you ever already encountered any issues along the way that maybe you didn't want to cover or you felt uncomfortable with, maybe a job you passed on?
Generally, I can separate myself from the job and treat it as it's a work-for-hire situation, where the only thing I'm really never comfortable and I haven't done a lot of is really nudity and I haven't done a lot of horror in comics either. Not that I'm opposed to horror or nudity, but I'm a superhero guy. I've been a mainstream guy for 30 years, so really never asked to do that, I'm not sure I'd be comfortable drawing, male body parts and stuff like that anyhow. It just wouldn't be something I'd be interested in doing. I grew up drawing muscles and guys flying, so a big difference that way.
And what about that have you most enjoyed over the years? I know you've probably touched just about every character in the Marvel Universe. Do you have a favorite?
I'm a cosmic superhero guy. I like the Silver Surfer, Adam Warlock. The more obscure guys, at DC it would be the Spectre or Deadman. At Marvel it would also be Black Bolt. Guys that, kind of like the guys are not anti-heroes, but, just misunderstood kind of guys, I love that kind of stuff. I was never a big Superman fan growing up. I was also a big Marvel guy.
So with everything that's being transferred from media to media these days, is there anyone that you've drawn that you'd like to see on the big screen?
I got to see the Silver Surfer. I'm kind of really excited for Adam Warlock, which I think might happen in the next Guardians movie, I think, and possibly about Black Bolt, where they're doing an Inhumans movie in the next year or two.
And how has the sort of the digital age affected your work?
I'm old school, I'm pushing 59 years old, and I was told at one point by a Marvel editor, I went to D.C., he said to me, I'm one of the few guys that's still doing, sending in my artwork by FedEx. And I said, really? He goes, yeah, about 85% guys are doing digital now. And I wasn't even aware of that. And I had to learn. You know, I had to go buy myself a full-size flatbed printer. And I had to learn how to scan artwork and send it. And that was a huge awakening for me, because when I started in 86 at Marvel, late 85 at Marvel, everything, they wanted you to be around the offices so you could come in and, you know, problem solve. But because of the digital age, you don't have to be anywhere near the offices, you know. And I, in fact, I had a story where a few years ago at Easter, I was asked to do a couple pages of a Justice League Rise of Arsenal miniseries. And the editor, it was a day before Easter or after Easter, and the editor said, can you take on a couple pages? I said, yeah. I said, where are they? The guy says, he's in Brazil. I said, I'll see him in 3 days. He goes, you have him in 10 minutes. And that's just the digital age mentality, you know. I wasn't prepared for that, but I've learned. I've come a long way.
Now, I know you've got some of your some personal projects that are near and dear to your heart. Why don't you tell me about those?
Sure. Well, the first thing I did was Banana Tail, which was a children's book. I did it when my daughter was 4 years old and my son was newborn. Now my daughter is 25. Today is her birthday. Happy birthday, Aaron. And my son's 20. And I have four storybooks out. And I'm working on a fifth one right now called Banana Tail in the Checkerboard Jungle, which is going to be a read-along book where you used to... kids will be turn, you know, try to follow the words and then turn the page. And I'm working with the voice actress, Erica Schroeder, who's done over 100 voices for anime like Sonic the Hedgehog and Pokemon and One Piece. And she actually rented out a soundstage at half price and is using some of her students to voice some of my characters. So I'm going to have it done on a CD and then attached to the book, which I'm excited about.
That sounds great. Where can our listeners find that?
Say again?
Where can our listeners find that?
Where
can they find it?
Oh, yeah. It will be on bananatail.com, B-A-N-A-N-A-T-A-I-L, not like prehensile tail.com. It will be available probably in the fall. I'm halfway done with the book right now.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'm working on is Combat Jacks, which is my sci-fi horror book. It's kind of a throwback to the cheesy 1950s rubber-suited monster movies, where I came up with a planet of alien pumpkins that take out a group of terraformers on this planet. And I just came up with this really just god-awful crazy story. And I'm going to do it as a Fortune miniseries now, and it's going to be collected hopefully by IDW Comics.
That's great. Is that available? No, one of the other digital media things we've seen is, including myself, and I'm a little embarrassed to say, I get a lot of my comics on Comixology now,
right,
rather than in print. How do you think that's like affecting the industry? And have you seen anything change just because of that?
Well, you know, I researched my name on Comixology a few months ago. I had about 35 titles on there, only three or four of my own, and then of course Marvel DC titles that they release. I used to get royalties based on sales of books. Digital royalties is a different animal because they didn't really know how to. In the beginning, it was a new animal to Marvel and DC. They didn't know how to do the proper royalty rates schemes. So they weren't quite sure to do it. I think they solved it, but, you know, it's not the same. You know, it's not the same as getting a royalty check based on sales, you know, of a hard copy comic book.
Yeah.
But I understand that Comixology is 85% of all comics are read on Comixology. I'm also on Drive Through Comics also, which is another one.
So we can find Combat Jack in both those locations?
Right. Yes. In fact, on Drive Through Comics, that's done as a bundle. One and two, you save a couple dollars buying them as a bundle. Number three, I just finished number three last week. I'm editing out for final edits, and I'll have the book in hand in about 2 months.
Who'd you collaborate with on that book, or is that all you?
It's me, my idea, my story. I hired an indie penciler named Jason Baruti, who really hadn't had a lot of success getting stuff in print, but he's a guy that's told me he'd work for me for free because he looked up to me as an opportunity for him to get more. I pay everybody, so nothing's free. Sam Eagleston, who is took one of my mediocre scripts and turned it into something special because I have no military background, and there are scenes with Space Marines, and he got me into clicks and LZs and things like that, so I let him run with it now, and I basically tell him what I want, and he finished up the stuff for me. Looks good, you know, and I'm using I've gone through four colorists, or almost five colorists in three issues, because can keep those guys. They just don't realize the amount of work that it takes to color a book. The last one I'm using right now is J.J. Jackson, who used to be Janet Jackson at Marvel Comics. She was Jim Shooter's girlfriend back when I worked on staff at Marvel. And she popped up and said, you want to color this? I'm in. So I told her what I could pay her. She was like, I'm in. And she's been nothing but professional. I'm happy to have her aboard.
That sounds great. I'm going to look forward to reading that.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the listeners, or anything else you've got, any other projects you've got?
No, I've got 19 shows this year. This is my second one. I was in Denver at a Star Fest 2 weeks ago. We're here at Super Mega Fest this week. I got a weekend off, and then I've got a show in the Poconos, Calgary Comic Con, all the way on the other side of the coast. It is the last weekend of April. And I'll be in Arkansas this year for a show. I'll be in Houston, Texas for a show. I'll be in Tampa for Free Comic Book Day. I'm all over the place. I just got offered an appearance in the Netherlands in October. I'm like, the Netherlands in October? I just can't even fathom that. I had to turn down one in Palm Springs, California, because I'm doing a Vermont show. And, I'm not one to be, Palm Springs, Vermont. You know, I'd rather be in Palm Springs, but the reality is I already committed, and I won't do that to the guy, you know.
Fair enough. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you much, Joe.
Thanks.
That was a terrific interview. Josh, he must have been hilarious to talk to. He seems like such a nice guy.
He was a really nice guy, took the time to sit down with me. I will look for him at every con.
Well, that sounds terrific. Now that brings us to plugs. Tom, what do you got to plug today?
I'd like to plug ianlino.com, IanLeino.com, purveyor of fine T-shirts and glassware and other geeky things. Great, great products over at ianlino.com.
All right, Mikey, what do you got to plug today?
All right, I'd like to plug Space City Comic Con going on in Houston from May 27th to the 29th. Still don't know if I'm going to be doing a panel out there, but I do know I'm going to be doing a panel in Houston at Comic Palooza on June 18th. You can come see us doing the horrible, horrible, horrible stereotype panel. It's going to be in room 20 at 4 o'clock on Saturday the 18th at Comic Palooza in Houston.
Hey, maybe you can get Emily to do that with you. She might be able to take that drive. She'd be terrific.
Yeah, I'm trying to get Emily and friend of the podcast, Bill Ploss, to go with me.
Oh, that'd be terrific. I'm just going to plug our Twitter page. That's Outside the Long Box, at the Long Box Guys. A lot of good stuff going on there. A lot of conversations happening. If you like comic books, and who doesn't? If you're listening to this podcast, you really should. Try to go over to our Twitter page and give us a little shout out. And also, let's talk a little bit about Philadelphia coming up. We'll be at Philadelphia Wizard World. We're not sure what panel we'll be giving, but we're all going to be there and having a great time.
I'd like to plug epicnerdcamp.com. It's a fun little getaway in western Pennsylvania where you can combine summer camp with the fun of nerd activities. I'll be teaching fencing and DMing, including a ripoff of Killer Breakfast every morning.
And that's not for kids, right? This is a grown-up event.
Absolutely. No kids allowed.
Oh, wait. How grown up are we talking about here?
Not as grown up as trying to Google jungle action.
Well said, my good friend. Well, that's all we have time for today here at Thinking Outside the Long Box. I forgot what podcast we were doing.
That's all right. We still do have to plug one other person.
Who's that?
Our house rock band, Kirby Crackle. As I was pointed out by a studious emailer, go to KirbyCracklemusic.com if you want to check out Kirby Crackle, or go check them out on iTunes or Bandcamp. They have a new song that just got released and is part of the Guardians of Galaxy animated show.
All right. Well, that'll be terrific, and we'll all go see and do that. And from everyone at Thinking Outside the Long Box, my name is Tom.
I'm Mike.
I'm Josh.
I'm Tom.
And that's all the time we have here at Outside the Long Box. And just remember what we always say. Don't spend the energy dissing what you hate. Just go out there and promote what you love. Have a great night, guys.